Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin, and I didn't make much of a big deal about it last week, but I did mention that it was Sam Panayotovich's dad's birthday, and there was just a sighting of his dad here in the lobby at Tribune Tower, who kindly brought me a birthday cake. And thank you so much, Sam, and happy 70th birthday to you. And he's now headed up to the newsroom to share some goodies with those folks up there as well. It's been, because it was the July 3rd, July 4th weekend, and I didn't want to really get into the intricacies of the temporary break in the Springfield impasse, I thought we'd do some catching up with that kind of after celebrating last weekend. And we finally did have a break, and joining me now on the phone is my good friend, the State House correspondent for Illinois Public Radio and WUIS-FM in Springfield, Amanda Vinicky. Amanda, thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. I want to play this cut of Governor Rauner speaking outside the governor's office following this six-month stopgap budget legislation that was passed. And I want everybody to listen carefully to how he interprets it.
Let's be clear. This is just a small step in the process of making Illinois strong and healthy and vibrant. This is a small step in the right direction. This is not a budget. This is not a balanced budget. This is not a solution to our long-term challenges. This is a bridge to reform.
Okay, bridge to reform being the key word, although if you remember some of the epic Senate debates, is it really a bridge to nowhere?
Exactly, or maybe imagine a bridge and then it just stops at the halfway point. And so what do you do? You jump off, go back? I'm not quite sure it's a bridge to reform. And further, of course, that I think the governor by that means his turnaround agenda, an agenda that wasn't included in the budget, of course, and that's why Democrats say they were able to back it, and that's why it passed. So, I'm not sure that we can agree with that characterization, but I think he had to put some sort of positive spin on that just because, frankly, Illinois needed something to happen. So I think that's why so many people are cheering for this measure. And yet it really, as I noted, kind of that bridge that goes halfway, it doesn't quite actually lead the state to anywhere or resolve so many of the longstanding budget issues.
And it's not even a balanced six-month budget.
No, it's not. Because you've got to remember, it's not just the budget itself. So you hear also Governor Rauner going around saying this is better than the $7 billion out of balance budget that Democrats tried to pass, which is true because it doesn't cover a full year of spending. But it both doesn't include all of the money that Illinois is still paying out because of court order, consent decree, and continuing appropriations. So there's like this huge chunk of money that isn't part of it. So I think that there's that to keep in mind. And frankly, as I noted, it also is a budget that says that it's supposed to take Illinois through December, but there are questions about whether that will even be allowed to happen or whether the state will run out of money before that point in time. And then you also have that it's covering, in cases, spending for the fiscal year that ended in June, also supposedly, again, the first 6 months of this fiscal year. And yet, even with that, many of the social service agencies, or for example, you look at higher education, they're not getting money for, you know, the full, if they were
getting, they're not getting their, they're not getting
money,
made whole.
They're not getting their share. No, they're not getting made whole at all. And yet, as you noted, it overspends. So that's where I think there's room for some hefty criticism of the budget, because, again, it just doesn't resolve any of the matters that lie at the heart of why Illinois has an unbalanced budget and why, frankly, the governor said he was going to come into office and do something about it.
Well, you know, when the governor said that, when he called it a bridge to reform, he was, in his remarks, indicated that both the Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan and Democratic Senate President John Cullerton have said that they wouldn't take up his so-called turnaround agenda until after the election, and that he still felt like that was something that they would take up after the election. And that's why I kind of question whether it's really a bridge to nowhere.
Right. Well, I mean, a couple of things here. First of all, I can't quite imagine the Democratic leader saying that to him. However, I do think that the notion is probably true, and that's not just for Democrats, but for Republicans as well. Leading into an election is just not the time that a lot of controversial measures like he's been asking for a while now, we're going to finally come to a head. That's not the time that you do it. But afterward, he's really holding out hope that some of the however many millions of dollars he's going to pour into the race will make a difference. And he seems to believe that that will, you know, turn the tide, that there will be enough Republicans that it will diminish Madigan's power. I don't know, and if that will happen, of course, the election is a ways away, but that's at least what he's saying. There's really, however, very few scenarios where you could take away Democratic supermajorities, even, or at very least, it would be difficult for Democratic majorities to be done away with. And so I think that this is the recognition of divided government. And they were able to, in this, achieve some form of, you know, kind of compromise. And there will be a couple of issues that do need to come to a head. So you look at, for example, pensions. And in order for Chicago public schools to get some of its money, that some form of what evidently the governor deems appropriate and acceptable in terms of reducing the state's costs when it comes to public employee pensions, that's got to pass. That's part of this bargain there. So I guess we will see something on his turnaround agenda, presumably go forward after the election.
But you did have the governor leading up to this, you had the governor saying and truly going around the state saying, no, not more, not one extra dollar for Chicago public schools. No bailout for Chicago public schools. And now you have these supporters who have, Republicans who have passed with Democrats a full year funding plan for the state's public schools. You now find these Republicans now having to explain, oh no, I didn't vote for a bailout for Chicago public schools.
Right. This isn't a bailout. They all need T-shirts that say that when they go knocking door to door to ask voters for support. I mean, it is something that I think a lot of people notice, because you had the governor in his budget address, or perhaps it was the State of the State, but regardless, very early this year, the governor in one of his big speeches talking about education funding, and that was one of really the big holdups with the budget, particularly because Democrats in the Senate were calling for a change in the formula and how Illinois decides, okay, we've got this much money and how it's going to be divvied up to various school districts, because they believe that it's very unfair. So there was this big push for change. And the governor during this address said, you know, what has been a problem with it in the past is this. It's been so divisive and putting one district over the other. And then even as he had decried the division here, kind of fomented it, as you noted, on this tour, and really trying to almost pit Chicago versus downstate. And then you're right, Rick. I think that a lot of people do see this as quote-unquote bailout. But than the defenders, Republicans, say in saying, no, you don't call it that, that isn't true, is, again, that it does come along with the overall pension, what advocates of that would call relief, which I think public employees would say, hey, no, that's pension theft. But
That's why I never use the word reform.
Exactly. He can use it, but I'm not going to use that word reform either. That comes along with the connotation that it's a good thing. But regardless, it comes along with this pension change. And so I think that's part of it. And then you do have other schools. It's not just CPS that is getting advantage. But talking about an out-of-balance budget, I mean, schools get a heck of a lot more money. I think the governor was in a tough position because he portrayed himself as the education governor, wanting to put more money into schools. And Democrats looked at that and said, oh, yeah, you think that that's enough money for schools? No. We want to top that. And all well and good, I think most people would say, we want our schools to be great and you want children to be educated. And that is important for the future and the economy. But at this point in time, Illinois, of course, doesn't have hundreds of millions of dollars extra lying around. So it's even more pressure for some either bigger cuts elsewhere or a tax increase down the road.
We're speaking with Amanda Vinicky. She's the State House correspondent for Illinois Public Radio, WUIS-FM Springfield, and also a recent birthday girl. Happy birthday, Amanda.
Aww.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. 7:48 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is your Sunday Spin. And I'm speaking with Amanda Vinicky. She's the State House correspondent of Illinois Public Radio, WUIS-FM Springfield. And we're kind of talking about some of the multiple dimensions of the temporary six-month resolution of the Springfield impasse. And, you know, Amanda, a lot of people have asked me, you know, what actually led to kind of the breaking of the logjam. And part of me thinks it's that, you know, we've seen this game of chicken going on for 18 months on both sides because both sides thought they were winning. And I have to wonder that, you know, as it became apparent that it was a very real threat that schools might not open, the additional monetary issues with Chicago Public Schools, that the risk kind of outweighed the reward.
Mm-hmm. And kind of mutually assured opposite. It was going to be mutually assured destruction, but to what end? And so instead they finally came together. And I do think the election pressure played into that. It's the question that I'm always asked is, you know, how can they not get it together? And if that were me and I was a legislator, the governor or whatever, and I didn't do my job like that, you better believe I was fired. And of course, that's what elections are for. And there are not enough districts that are competitive. I think where you would see the true turnover, just not enough people running for office. And not enough money being poured into it compared to what both the speaker and, of course, the governor, even more so, are going to put into these campaigns and races. But nonetheless, when you are having, I think, it's pressure from voters who then put the pressure on their rank-and-file legislators who then put the pressure on high and say, we can't do this any longer. And so, like you said, I mean, just the thought of schools not opening on time, what were they going to do when they need to be worried about their election? And then instead spending the entire summer in Springfield fighting over the opening of schools. I mean, Illinois had already really become a laughingstock. This is a historic impasse. The longest, you talk to the folks at NCSL, that's the National Conference of State Legislatures, and they, you know, measure, and they can't say the longest that any state has gone in throughout history without a budget, but, well, kind of the longest in their recorded history dating back to the 30s or so that any state has gone. So it just got to the point of, I think, untenable, embarrassing. Another point of pressure, legislators hadn't been paid. They did get checks this week, but beyond that, they had gone at the bottom of this big pile of checks that Illinois doesn't have money to actually pay on time. And I think that that was some pressure. So there are various elements. But really, Rick, I think when it comes down to it, it's as you said, just they both thought they were winning. It turned out that all sides were losing. And so they came to an agreement, and you cannot and should not, I guess, given how harmful the impasse has been, not find that reason to, I don't want to say celebrate because that's too strong, but good. You know, finally, these guys and one woman got together and were able to reach a compromise. But you also can't give any sort of true toast or dance about, all right, it's done. They came to an agreement, because they really just left most of the stuff and kind of hid it under the tablecloth.
And it's a half agreement, and it's part of the job that they're supposed to do. We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome, as always, to the Sunday Stand.
Yes, good morning, Rick. Amanda, certainly that decision probably was politically popular, but I think the elected officials were still negligent in their duty. Where is the revenue coming? If the state is already $9 billion in the hole and they have not come up with any revenue for this 6 months to cover these programs. So that's my question. Where is the revenue? Thank you.
And that's the big unknown question.
Darn good question.
Well, and certainly it was highly unlikely that any action on raising taxes or raising revenue, the euphemism, was going to happen before the November election. And a couple of reasons there is, one, of course, no politician wants to raise taxes before an election. Two, Democrats were not going to raise taxes alone. They were going to require some Republican votes to do that. And so the fear of voter retribution existed, really, I think, on both sides.
Exactly. And I think the governor has long said he won't go along with any sort of tax increase unless he gets his way on the quote-unquote turnaround agenda. Those are those either business reforms, term limits. If that passed, maybe he'd be all right with it, something along with that, along those lines. And, of course, that hasn't happened. And so that's where really, as I keep on saying, because I think you can't diminish that, the true heart of the argument hasn't gone anywhere. And even though, again, there was an agreement to do something about pensions, what that will look like or what that will be, that hasn't been decided. And further,
plus you have the legality of of whatever they do with that as well.
Right, sure, past sentence, but if the courts knock it out, what does that do to the states, to this question overall? You can't rely on it for years to come. So there's so much unresolved, and really, and then, of course, the revenue. So you look at it, and like I said, it's a good question in terms of where is the revenue. I guess, in a sense, you could think of this as a minor positive for the budget, and that every day that the impasse went on, it was costing the state more and more and more, but not really there, because Illinois is continuing to run up a monster deficit, which means we continue to have to pay interest on these bills that were overdue and paying, and that continues to put a strain on all of the vendors that choose to do business in this state. And you did have the credit ratings agencies weigh in, and really, particularly when it comes to universities, the very day that this budget passed, you saw a majority of the state's public universities get a credit downgrade, because the agency said, hey, yeah, great, you get some money, but it's like a meager percentage of what you would typically get in, it's supposed to cover a 2 years' time. There's no guarantee. People say that it's a partial budget that carries the state through to December, but clearly what we've seen, there's no telling that any action will happen then. So how long really is this money going to have to last? There's just a whole host of issues ahead.
One thing I think that's interesting in kind of the aftermath of the days of when everybody, you know, was able to get out of Springfield, were some of the comments by the governor in which he said that, you know, perhaps the biggest mistake he made was in the way he did his messaging. And in some respects, even taking shots at the media, because the media didn't really understand or relay what he was saying.
Yeah, I haven't spoken with a lot of people to get their reaction, but I am guessing that there will be many Illinois residents that might be offended by that notion that, you know, at this time where so much pain has been caused, that was the regret. But I mean, I don't know. I think the media, it's difficult in a sense, too, because what he's been asking for when it comes to the turnaround agenda, they're all complicated issues. You know, what is the prevailing wage? So to get into that in every story and to really explain that, to explain what is at stake, because I think it's not just a couple or this handful of changes, but if you take it a step further, this is something, for example, in diminishing the power of unions that has consequences, not obviously just for the unions themselves, but that has long-term political consequences, as would, let's say, you know, term limits or changing how the state draws its district lines. It has the potential to really diminish Democrats' power going forward well into the future. So, I mean, there's so much. But thanks, Rauner. I guess we'll do better, Governor. It's the media. I think we've tried our hardest. Not that the media is always deserving of its own pat on the back. But it was an interesting answer to a question of biggest regret. And I think really shows, again, that he's digging in his heels, if that's the regret of the situation.
Interesting answer. I would agree with you 100%. Amanda Vinicky, State House correspondent from Illinois Public Radio, WUIS-FM Springfield. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Beautiful day. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this.